Welcome to FemTech at Work, the podcast where we explore the intersection of technology, health, and women's empowerment in the workplace, hosted by me, Maaike Steinebach. This show will dive into the innovative solutions transforming women's health and well-being in the workplace. Join us as we chat with FemTech founders, industry leaders, and change makers who are pioneering advancements in FemTech and women's health. We discuss everything: menstrual health, reproductive rights, menopause, but also the challenges women face in the workplace and how innovation can overcome them. Whether you're a seasoned professional or just starting your FemTech journey, FemTech at Work is here to inspire and inform you about the future of health and wellness for women everywhere. Tune in and be part of the conversation. Hi, and welcome to today's episode of the podcast FemTech at Work with a very special guest from Singapore today, Grace Oh, who is the founder of Soul, or Spring of Life. Grace, welcome. Amazing to have you here.
Thank you, Maaike, for inviting me and really being the voice for a lot of people like me, FemTech founders who are passionate about bringing a change.
Yes, you guys are doing all the hard slog. Tell me a little bit about your background and what inspired you to start Spring of Life.
I had decades of frustration with my own life as a female gender. And at some point, I think around the time when I had my second child, kind of epiphany came, right? So I realized that in my teen years, from about age 9 to 19 or so, I was pressured to play the violin pretty seriously, like typical Asian parents that I had in Korea. They thought that was the best thing for a girl, but I had no interest in it. And I ended up actually going to the Juilliard pre-college to pursue something I didn't want to do.
Oh my God.
It was something that I just didn't want to do, but I just couldn't break away from it because the social pressure was so big. It took 10 years of critical window from 9 to 19 when you're supposed to learn a lot of things and explore. I remember just playing the violin in the room. I finally broke away from it. And then my career was going really well. And I was once voted as a top 10 analyst in Asia by Financial Times. But then a lot of things also changed. When I had my first child, I had a very difficult decision to make in terms of being together with my husband because we are doing a long distance relationship. And in retrospect, I realized that the pressure was on me to make accommodations and being flexible. It's always kind of on me to do it. And I didn't realize at that time. I was young. I was naive. I thought, okay, I can do anything. I can go to another city, another country. I was good before. I can do it. But I think too naive. And then my husband's career was unstable for a while because he was in finance. We ended up moving from Seoul to New York, Hong Kong, and now in Singapore. During that time, I did a lot of soul searching and I was really dissatisfied with my life. Why am I spending almost half of my life basically listening to somebody else? That was a key question I had. And then I realized that it's not me. There are a lot of women like me who are kind of lost in their identity. And then I began doing research about how I can help women. And then I realized, wow, there's so little research out there in women's health, especially beyond having babies. After you're having a baby, you're kind of like not interesting, right? So a lot of societal, I think, interest is in the fertility space and then maternal space. But beyond that, there's very little research on women's specific issues, as you know, cardiovascular disease, Alzheimer's, autoimmune disease, you name it, right? And I realized that perimenopause and menopause years, so-called midlife, can be a really good time to actually be aware of your own health risk and then intervene early enough so you actually prevent all these more serious illnesses. And also my vision is not just about health in a narrow sense, but it's also about how can women actually reclaim their identity and their voice. And health is just one part of it, obviously. But it's also about living your life the way that you want, not dictated by other people. But I mean, obviously, having a good health is going to be a foundation of all these things. That's why I started from perimenopause, menopause. And the goal is to go beyond that, help people have achieved their longevity, help the employers also find solutions for their female employees, and also for the governments to find solutions in terms of lowering their health costs related to aging, and then intervene early enough so that you can have a good outcome.
Wow, amazing. It's so interesting what you mentioned about your own journey, because I think there's lots of women out there that will recognize that in themselves. I think what is also interesting, what was a bit eye-opening for me, was I did a podcast episode with Dr. Leona Poon, and she mentioned when a baby is born, when mothers have a baby basically gets a passport, right, to follow that child for their whole life. Did they have their vaccinations, do their checkups, etc.? But for the mother, basically, they are released from the hospital. They do 6 weeks checkup and then they're gone. It's like, bye, good luck, mom. And then they have no health passport or nobody follows them anymore. And that is, I think, exactly what you're saying. The system focuses very much on fertility and maternal health care. And then after that, they're lost. Amazing that you started work on this space. And it looks like you're very ambitious. But tell me, what does Soul do?
We want to create a solution that's more modern, right, for women in Asia specifically, and then made by professionals in the healthcare. It's almost like having a team of experts in your pocket, because we are just more than an app, but app is a very scalable, easy solution that you can follow, you can track your symptoms, and then a lot of personalization can happen with that data and technology. Of course, we go beyond that. You know, we build a community of people as well through the flash forward we did in April, bringing together a lot of experts and communities together. But also these monthly meetups that we facilitate, we basically invite each healthcare professional in a different field and let them facilitate the discussion. So it's more like a safe space for women to come, and anyone can come. They don't have to be a member of Soul, and they can have a safe space. But I think my understanding is that, you know, it's much better if you have a facilitation by experts, because they have the latest evidence and they can guide women through a lot of noise, because social media is full of information and full of noise, and health and wellness is really nuanced. You don't want to jump into conclusion and say, okay, certain supplements are great for me because it works for other people. And that's why we provide this forum where we connect different professionals from lifestyle medicine, conventional medicine, and complementary medicine, because we want to also give people choice. But also, a lot of women can just come and have a safe space. They can ask any questions. They can also share their experiences so that the practitioners can get feedback. Because the problem I find is that, especially the conventional medicine model, is great at certain things, but has limitations. Limitations on how to actually prevent problems from occurring. And then also looking at people from holistic point of view. That's why a lot of people who are discouraged by these doctors who just give them pills, like antidepressant is actually number one overprescribed medication. I even had a personal experience with that doctor just offering that without any indication of clinical depression. I think a lot of people are dissatisfied with that existing model and they're looking for an alternative. The problem is, also, the alternative solutions can be biased as well. So we try to be as objective as possible, pull the data, evidence from different authoritative sources like menopause societies, lifestyle medicine societies, and different databases that are trustworthy, government databases. Things like that will help women go through the evidence with the practitioners. We're almost like having a team of experts in your pocket, have a personalized solutions based on your symptoms, health conditions, and ethnicity and age as well. And that's important because if you are, let's say, South Asian, like Indian, then first of all, your menopause will probably happen earlier, like 5 years earlier in terms of statistics, like 46 compared to Caucasian women at 51. And then your symptoms will be very different. So you are not going to know based on the common literature from US or UK menopause society that, oh, your symptom should be hot flashes, but you don't have hot flashes, so you don't have menopause. And then the most important thing is that you kind of miss this critical window, because if you are a certain ethnicity like Indians, you might have higher risk of cardiovascular disease, metabolic disease, and then you might have certain issues with sarcopenia. It's important to have a little bit more personalization than what we are used to. And obviously, evidence is evolving. We have more data coming out, more research coming out, then it's even better, right? We can even have better solution for each person, because each time I go to these events, I hold these events where all these women come, the number one question I get is that, what about me? Is the data relevant to me?
But you know what is interesting, Grace? You think about it, right? You take a step back and you think about it. You and I are both women, but we already have completely different needs, not just because of our ethnicity, but just because we are completely different persons, right? Our genetic makeup is completely different. I find it fascinating that actually where we need to go is kind of precision medicine for every individual, because our needs are all different, but the system cannot handle that. I think with AI, we are getting closer to that. But at the moment, the medical system, it's just not set up for that. I do feel that technology and all the digital work and medtech and biotech that is happening is getting us closer to that, but we are still not there. And I love the fact that you mention the differences, because firstly, everything was done on white women. We know a little bit more on Asian women, but think about mixed race. That's even a bigger problem. We don't know anything about that. In your experience, what are the biggest challenges that women in Asia are facing with menopause care at the moment?
I think the number one barrier is more cultural, because people don't acknowledge that's their issue. It's also culturally driven, because they don't want to openly discuss it because they don't want to be associated with aging. It's a big factor. Whereas some Caucasian women might be more interested in proactively finding out what it means, even if it doesn't hit them right now, what it means and what they can do now to be healthier. If you are not interested, you are not going to invest the time. And then also the same thing with, I think, employers, right? If the employees don't speak up, employers are too busy. HR professionals are too busy dealing with different issues. How are they going to know? I mean, of course, now more and more people are involved and there are more people pushing for this, but we still know that, you know, 6-7% of women in Asia Pacific, they say that menopause symptoms can actually influence their professional and personal lives significantly, but only 29% of the employers, they have menopause-friendly policy. So it's just one example. And we also know that demographically, it's a huge issue in Asia. We know that aging society, we know that there will be like 55% increase, I saw, of the people who are going to be over 50 in Singapore, they're in workplace, which means that they're going to account for, I think, more than 40% of the workforce. Hong Kong is probably not much better. And we know Korea and Japan also have an aging issue. It's not just an individual person's issue, but it's also employer issue, because there's a huge percentage of people who are entering, who are remaining in workforce, even older age. And then obviously, as people live longer, but not living healthier, it's a huge cost to the government. Number one thing is a cultural kind of barrier to openly acknowledge it. And therefore, education is limited. Medical professionals, we know already, there is a very small percentage of medical professionals up to date on the latest menopause stuff. I mean, not just menopause, let's say just the latest trend. We know that even the statistics in the US says like 80% of the doctors don't feel comfortable actually treating menopause. You heard about WHI study more than 20 years ago. They kind of prevented a lot of people from seeking care, especially HRT. But I think it just takes a lot of time and things are definitely changing. But because there's a cultural nuance here, I think that's kind of the number one thing that we have to overcome. But it is definitely changing, because you mentioned that data technology, a lot of people are more used to using an app or using their devices, their wearables. They can track and they see the power of data, and the data belongs to them. They can get a lot of insights from that data. And then I think once the individuals actually realize this one and they go to a doctor, and our model is exactly that. We work with the practitioners with the data that we gather, and then you share the insight and you save so much of your time, because a consultation time can be really limited. So you can actually save that much time and then just talk about more important things.
Yeah. Grace, when did you start work on Soul?
I actually had a company called Well for Her before Soul. I rebranded it, but I basically started officially like December 2020 with my YouTube channel. And then I wanted to actually educate women with more bite-sized content that I can do, because I'm not a medical professional. So I cannot like go out there and like all do all these things. I started, I guess, during COVID, right, in Hong Kong, and then create videos, educational stuff. And then when I moved to Singapore about 3 years ago, I met different people, different professionals, and it really accelerated, because I always had the idea of creating something digital, because digital is the way to go. And it's scalable and it's easy and it's cheap. We can solve a lot of problems and you can collaborate with a lot of parties with the data and then with what you collect. And then also you can create actionable solution. That's a key. It's not just information, but how are you going to make people develop a different habit? Everyone knows drinking water is good. Everyone knows eating more vegetables is good. But first of all, people don't really feel like they have to do it now,
right? Yes.
And then people don't feel like it's easy enough for them. Then how do you solve the problem? So I thought I always wanted to do a digital solution. It took me a lot of time to gather evidence, first of all, because it's a medical data, full different evidence from different societies, and just basically designing the framework, having a philosophy around what am I trying to do? Because, okay, it's great to try to solve a problem, but what is the problem I'm trying to solve? And then it took me a while to also develop content with different professionals in Asia, as well as other countries, other areas. That also took a time. And then also medically review. We medically review our content. That also takes time. And then the app design and all this. I also did a conference, right? So it took me a lot of time to do all these things.
You already talked a little bit about some of the challenges, but what do you feel has been one of the key challenges for you as a founder?
It's a notion that everyone kind of experienced this one, but like women's health is more like a niche, right? Because I mean, each one of us is dealing with maybe some segment of women's health because you have to, you know, if you want to do really well, you kind of have to have a specialty. In terms of that, then people think, okay, menopause is not really a disease. It's not serious enough. Write a blog. That's basically the consistent feedback I got. Actually, you know what? That's the consistent feedback I got from all these well-known mentors who are middle-aged men. So in Hong Kong, when I started, I got feedback from a lot of different people. I tried to do that. And then every single person told me, just write a blog. I mean, I think it's really well meant, but I think also it's beyond that. But then people don't really necessarily recognize that you can do so much with it. And you can actually also have revenue models, sustainable revenue models with that. But in the femtech space, we don't have a lot of role models say, okay, this is commercially viable. It's great that you are very passionate, but how are you going to translate into revenues and profits? And when you actually try to consult people who are well established, then they don't get it. I think this is more like a chicken and egg problem, right? Like in order to be bigger, you need funding, but in order to get funding, you got to prove the concept. But I mean, this is something that we can all do with collaboration. That's why we are here, right?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think a lot of this is also about educating the ecosystem. I think we are so passionate about all of this stuff that we assume everybody else is going to be as well. But I think as a lot of investors will tell you, firstly, they don't necessarily have a gender lens. So they don't specifically look at things like women's health. And then it's about educating the ecosystem. It's about educating the women themselves. It's about educating the corporates. And it's about educating the insurers and investors about why this is necessary. It's going to be a really long slog, I think, for all of this. When are you launching the app?
We are launching after we test. So we are testing it right now. I think in a couple of months' time, we launch.
Is it a global app? Can everybody join or how does it work?
Yes, it's going to be global because we want to make it available for every country. But it's going to be only English when we first launch it.
Okay, well, that makes sense because otherwise it's a little bit hard, right?
Yeah, I mean, as you know, founder with a limited budget, because we need to gain traction with end users. We need MVP, but the MVP cannot be too heavy because we have to keep testing. We have to make it just minimally viable. And then we go out with attraction, we raise money.
How has the feedback from the community and from the healthcare providers been? Are they welcoming the solution? Are they the women? I'm assuming you built your community already with the conference and your testers. What is the feedback from them?
Yeah, I think people are very excited about having kind of one solution that's made for women in Asia. We don't just exclude like other women. We say women in Asia. So like we make it accessible for them to find the right professionals, for example, in Singapore or Hong Kong, wherever you live. And then we also try to devise content that's more for people in Asia. And of course, you know, once the MVP is out and then once we test it, of course, we can evolve to be a different player. We can expand our offering. But the feedback has been very positive. Yeah, we have a rapidly growing community of people who are very interested and who really want to have professionally guided solution that's based on a holistic approach, but also based on evidence. You cannot just like say, oh, okay, just have vitamins. So what's the evidence behind it? And then action-oriented. People are very interested in that kind of like very easy digital solution.
What to do? Yes.
Yeah. Tell me what to do. So basically like 5-day program, for example, you know, 5-day reset program for nutrition. You can follow without thinking too much. And it's very bite-sized and it's based on behavioral science. You can try to change your behavior easily than just reading a piece of information from your device.
And how have the healthcare providers been supporting you?
Oh, they have been absolutely great because, I mean, I got really good traction with healthcare professionals, actually in conventional medicine, but also lifestyle and then complementary medicine. They're very interested in being part of it. And then they donated their time to be interviewed, right? So then I create content based on the interviews. They have a vested interest, right? Because they're the ones that created content with me. And then they keep asking, oh, when is it coming out? And they want to use it for their patients.
Yeah, amazing. How do you see the future of menopause care in Asia? Because I feel globally menopause is having a bit of momentum. And I also feel that across Asia is becoming a topic which is becoming more popular, more companies looking into this space. What is your vision for the future of menopause care in Asia?
I want to shift the narrative. Menopause can be a very good time to intervene, first of all, and then also change the perception that, you know, menopause is not like the end of your youth or end of your fertility. It's actually a beginning of your new life with new identity. Yes. But of course, in order to do that, you got to have a good foundation, good health. You have to feel right. That's why we are doing this solution where you can seek help if you need it. And then, of course, lifestyle intervention can be very important. We want to be a platform for women around perimenopause, but also beyond that, like literally for the rest of your life. How do you actually find longevity? How do you really find the best solution personalized for you so that you can feel the best? And then we want to work with all the parties. So we want to work with not just employers, but governments, because governments have vested interest in helping half of the population or even more after a certain age, right? To be extra healthier and then reduce the cost to healthcare.
Yeah. And are you seeing that kind of interest, for example, from the Singapore government where you are based? Are they interested in what you are building? Is it easy to connect with them for you?
There has a lot of been longevity movement in Singapore, right? So there's a longevity center and there's a lot of solutions. And then Singapore government is very proud of the fact that, you know, Singapore has been mentioned as a blue zone, vested interest there. However, I think as a private player, you got to kind of prove that there's a need. That's why we are starting with a digital solution with the end users in mind, prove the concept and then engage them. Because I think you cannot just like engage them without any solution.
Yeah, you need proof points. You need evidence-based proof points.
Exactly. So they know already it's very important. Connecting the dots with menopause, maybe not there yet, but it's a great point, right? And more data we have, the more research we can do too. Also, research institutions are getting more interested, but obviously Asia is, I would say, behind UK at least. So there's a lot more to do.
Yes, UK, I think, is a little bit of the gold standard for menopause at the moment. So which other femtech company that is in the menopause space do you admire and do you follow?
Well, I follow MediHealth, for example. You know, US, they raise a lot of funding and they just introduced Healthy Aging, you know, Age Well. It's their programs. They started with a virtual clinic for basically HRT for menopause symptoms, but then now they expanded to chronic disease prevention, testing for your osteoporosis and things. This is a model, of course, I'm very interested in replicating, but not necessarily in the virtual care space in Asia, because all the rules, different rules in Asia versus grayscale in the US, right? You cannot replicate that because each country has different rules and stuff. So once we get more funding, if there's a lot of need, why not? But I'm starting with digital solution. And then there's so much to do with that, as you know, like AI and all that. There's so much technology to keep track of. And then things are changing so quickly. So you got to also like adopt the best one out there. I mean, there's so much to do already there.
Yeah, that's a really good point, right? Because things are changing so fast and the technology is also changing so fast. How do you stay grounded? How do you not let it freak you out? But on the other hand, how do you also stay educated about what is happening in this space? Do you do all your tech yourself or do you have a CTO? How does that work?
Yeah, so basically I work with different people who have different areas of specialty, right? So for me, I know the strength would be like community building, but also like establishing the different framework for evidence and working with different professionals. That has been my area of strength. And then I know that what users want. So that's the area of strength I have. But technology, I have no strength there. So I work with the team in Europe who can actually help me execute that, and then also work with the marketing branding team in Hong Kong. And then some people also help me in video and content production in Singapore. And then all over, actually, we also create content globally. I mean, nowadays, there's no border. Definitely, I'm trying to find the areas where I'm very good at. I do that. And then even that takes so much of my time. Then I have to find other collaborators in the professional space. They also want to be known as the experts. So then they would love to be part of this movement. We have a lot of room for collaboration as well. And then I would love to also collaborate with universities for research and then of course government as well. So there's so much work to do, employers and all that. And in terms of being grounded, I mean, I do work every day. I usually don't think too much because I have this life experience where I was told what to do. And then I listened to other people and then the results weren't that good. I realized that I can only actually rely on myself. And a lot of people gave me advice, which was probably well meant, but it wasn't really right. You got to know what you're trying to do and you got to believe that, I mean, come on, femtech is huge. We know that we are dealing with a huge population that's growing. It's like very logical even thinking. Just because it didn't happen before doesn't mean that it will not happen. We can also see from mental health. You can see from like period apps, previously fertility. I mean, things are kind of coming in different waves. So now I guess more momentum on menopause and then future maybe on longevity, right? But these are nothing new. I mean, these have been existed, but it's just that if you keep listening to other people about like venture capitalists or other mentors, startup founders who have no understanding of this, what you're trying to build, then you're going to be in trouble, right? But you got to know that, okay, everyone has a space that they want to fill and the market's huge. And then also figure out as we go, because I mean, the things that I think about might not necessarily be true when you test it. So you got to be nimble enough.
Yeah. From listening to you, I hear that you received a lot of advice that was well meant, but wasn't very useful. What advice would you have for founders that are either already in the women's health space or are looking to enter the women's health space? What is your top tip?
It's not just the women's health space, but you know, you got to understand your customers the best, right? So you got to just talk to them and then say, okay, I find that there is a good enough problem. And then I have a theory about solving it, build it, but very small scale. Don't try to be like the champion of menopause now, like globally, right? Because no way you'll be able to compete with MediHealth. But something small, something specific to where you are most interested in. Yes, you can seek advice, but I think it's important to know that a lot of people don't know what they're talking about. They might know things based on their own experience, but they haven't really built the same solution you're trying to build. Ultimately, it's your decision and you got to trust your decision. Even if you fail, what's the worst thing that's going to happen?
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, you have to trust the process, trust your own instincts, and basically make sure that you're happy with what you're doing. Because once you found your purpose, it's easier to bring people along on that journey eventually. And I do think one of the key challenges or the breaking points between success and non-success is how good your problem statement is. Because I have seen so many companies that are failing because they don't understand. Well, they think there is a problem, but they don't have data to support that this is really a problem. Congratulations, Grace. I'm super excited to see Soul come to life and can't wait to try the app myself as a menopausal woman. And also congratulations for deciding to make this app available globally. I think that is going to be a game changer for a lot of women. Congratulations. And thank you so much for sharing your story on my podcast today.
Well, thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to talk about actually everything menopause and women's health. Such an exciting time.
Very exciting time. If you enjoyed listening to Grace, please like and subscribe to my podcast so that I can give women like Grace and companies like Soul bigger exposure and more women hopefully can benefit from the information. And if you want to follow Grace, her social media profile will be in the show notes so you can get in touch with her directly. Thank you so much, Grace, for being here today.
Thank you, Micah.